So, should a Christian even be involved in politics? And if so, how should we start going about that and engaging in politics? We're going to start today by looking at the idea of putting politics in its place on the All Things to All People podcast. Let's get to it. All right, welcome back to the All Things to All People podcast. I'm so glad that you decided to join me today. This is the All Things to All People podcast with Michael Burns. And coincidentally, I am Michael Burns. We are continuing to go through the book Escaping the Beast, Politics, Allegiance, and Kingdom. Today, we're going to look at some of the concepts from chapter 16 of that book, which is called Politics in Its Place. The episodes of the, or the titles, I should say, of the podcast episodes don't always match up. In fact, more often than not, I think they don't match up with the chapter that we're looking at or what have you. But today, it just felt like a good match, a good capture of both what's in the book and what we're going to talk about today. And today is one of those good days, I think, because it's not going to be just me talking throughout the episode. We have a special guest today that I'm excited about. And so we are going to have a great discussion today. This is another one of those where I'm not going to so much read into or discuss the actual material in chapter 16. If you want to follow along, if you want to get that background, I would encourage you to check out Escaping the Beast if you don't already have it, and go through there. There are sections in there in the chapter where we talk about what is politics? How did the early church start to think and look about politics? Why did they avoid politics? Spoiler alert. Oops. You're supposed to say spoiler alert before you give up the goods. But, you know, we like to do things differently here, I guess. And so, but kind of let the cat out of the bag there, gave that away. That the early church tended to avoid politics, and that chapter engages in some of why that was, and then it looks at other things that can divide beyond just politics, national identity, historical experiences, cultural differences, and it just starts to give an introduction to those things. But we're not going to delve into that today. As I said, we're going to have a special guest, and let's turn to that right now. So my guest today is Will Archer, and I want to give a little introduction before we formally welcome Will here. Will is, he's been a disciple since he was 18 years old in the Bronx, New York, and since then he's served in the ministry all over, really, in seven different North American churches, over 20 years experience in leading missional communities in diverse ministry settings, and quite often in urban environments. He's been married to Tasha, who he identifies as the love of his life, for over 20 years. Is it 21 now?
21 now.
21. Yeah, 21. They have two children, a 17-year-old and a 12-year-old, which is fantastic. And Will is currently the lead evangelist in the Potomac Valley Church, which is really, truly a dynamic and diverse church congregation in Virginia. And they have a deep commitment to serving all people and multiplying authentic faith Now, Will also serves as the vice chair for the Human Services Alliance of Greater Prince William, and he's an alumni of Leadership Prince William, 2019 alumni. He has an undergraduate degree in public policy from Arcadia University and a master's degree from Wesley Theological Seminary in Washington, D.C. He is currently a doctoral candidate in educational ministry with a focus in educational leadership at Virginia Theological Seminary in Alexandria, Virginia. Will, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining us.
Brother, it's great to be with you. Very grateful for all the great work you're doing and have done and continue to do.
Man, I am so excited to have you on the show, truly. I've been waiting for this particular topic to kind of unleash you on my audience, because I'm such a dude, for real, you know, I'm a big fan of you and what you guys do there. And we've talked about that before. And I stalk your church from afar on social media and really appreciate the way you guys engage with the community and serve. And so I'm really looking forward to getting into this today so that others, you know, a lot of people already know who you are, but others that maybe don't, hearing what you guys do and hearing what drives you and some of that behind you. And normally I don't read like that much of an introduction for guests on my show, but I felt like all of that stuff was really relevant to the fact that you're not just a fantastic minister and evangelist. You've really thought through and studied this stuff out and have a if I can use the term, a method behind the madness. You're not just, you know, hey, let's do this. You really do have a philosophy. So maybe you can start us out here and just tell us, what are some of the things going on in the Potomac Valley Church? What are you all doing to engage and have an impact on the community? And I'm going to sit back because I know there's a lot. So you share as much as you want. We could be here for a while because you guys do so many great things.
Yeah, thank you so much again. I'm truly, truly honored to be a part of this conversation. You know, so we are a church that's 20 miles from Washington, D.C. We have family groups, Bible talks that extend from D.C. all the way snaking down I-95 to Fredericksburg. And as you mentioned, we're very racially diverse. Economically, we're not as diverse. We're kind of more middle income kind of folks. And we have some people that are on the margins, but we don't have anybody that's super rich. But so we're not as economically diverse, but we're definitely very racially, socially, and politically diverse. Small groups. And did you lose something there for a sec?
Yeah, it froze for a minute.
Did it glitch for a second there?
Yeah, we're back. You were saying you're go back to the small group part. Just start there.
Yeah, so we church with small groups. Sure. Okay, so we've moved very intentionally from being a church with small groups to a church of small groups. So currently we have about 20 small groups, our prayer is this year to expand out and have at least 20 more, prayerfully as many as 50 small groups by the end of the year. With everything that's gone on with the quarantine and with COVID-19, we've put a lot of energy and effort into our digital engagement. That's led to us establishing a digital campus. So we have two physical campuses, one in Prince William County that extends up to DC, and then one that's centered in Fredericksburg that covers Stafford and Fredericksburg and King George. So two physical campuses, and then a digital campus where we're really planning on engaging in a much more robust way online. This month, for instance, by God's incredible mercy, on Instagram alone, we're able to reach about 1 million people. And there are about 6 million people that are in our metro area. And so we're our goal is really to contribute to spreading light and spreading the gospel to as many people as possible. But we recognize that though we might have wide reach, we really want that to translate into people really being able to get connected in a small group. So our focus really is on the development of small groups right now in Potomac Valley. Beyond that, God's blessed us. I mean, we you mentioned the Human Service Alliance, we're one of the founding members. That's a local community organization aimed at poverty alleviation and bringing the faith community and the business community and concerned citizens together to really address issues. And we were really fortunate when CARES funds came out in our local municipality in Prince William. The Alliance got $3 million, and the Alliance entrusted Potomac Valley with $472,666.
Wow.
That we're able to help people to stay in their homes, literally ensure that people could have medical care, get medical bills covered, stay in their homes, cover child care expenses. And we're able to help 217 families, just to, you know, some that were behind by as much as 5 or 6 months worth of mortgage or rent, to be able to engage and meet needs. So there's really great things happening with community engagement and meeting real practical needs. Really exciting things that are happening in our social media engagement. But our big focus is how do we strengthen our existing small groups and multiply those small groups? Because, you know, reaching all these people only truly matters if it translates in people being able to get connected in a community and by faith really come to know God, you know. And so that's, you know, that's why we exist, is to preach the gospel. And so that's what's going on. It's been exciting. I'm super proud of our congregation, super proud of the staff, the elders, the deacons. One thing, just so you know, Michael, that, you know, we in particular, and I'm so grateful for the hard work that you're putting into addressing, you know, inequity and social justice and addressing real challenges that we've had in the community. And so we've also been engaging on that front with a team of deacons. And so I'm really excited about what God's doing there. I could share a little bit more later on, but, you know, so there's a lot happening. Things are moving on so many different fronts. But for me as a church leader, it's all about the small groups, bro.
Yeah.
That's where I've been living.
I appreciate that. And let me ask, I'm going to try to ask a real question here. So hopefully this won't throw you for a loop, but you know,
I know.
So here's what I think when I sit here and I hear you sharing about the amazing work you're doing, the Human Services Alliance and some of that. And I don't live in Potomac Valley. I'm in another church. I'm in Georgia or I'm in Washington or I'm in Minnesota or wherever. And I say, okay, is that something that could be reproduced, recreated in my church? Could we come to Potomac Valley and learn how you did it? Or is that just something, you know, certainly it's God's blessing and you guys have great gifts, but is it something that you sort of fell into that's a, you know, just a lucky situation, a blessed situation, and not something that could be recreated? Because, and I'll tell you why I asked the question before I let you answer, is there's nothing more frustrating to me than going to a conference or something. And it's cool when somebody shares, this is what we're doing. But then I'm like, but I couldn't do that. We don't have that situation or we don't have that sort of thing. So somebody sitting there listening, like, how could they learn from what you guys are doing? Is this something that could be reproduced or is it kind of a one-off just particular to where you're at?
No, absolutely. I appreciate that question because it is the most frustrating thing to hear, like, you know, like these amazing numbers and amazing good news. And you're like, but that's not my church. You know, and I just want to say this. I think, you know, I will be honest with you. There's nothing exceptional about me or about our church. We really are a church of really messed up people with lots of challenges. But I say that to say this, the process that we followed is absolutely reproducible because it is found in the four Gospels. I mean, it is nothing. Mm. There's nothing new about it. We've just returned to the ancient way of how to engage. And I definitely can share those principles. I'd be happy to, if anybody wants to come and see what we're doing, we're open source and we view ourselves as a lab that we can test things out and share the things that work. So engagement with local community leaders, absolutely reproducible. Gaining access to grant funds to meet direct needs, absolutely reproducible. The multiplication of small groups, reproducible. Engagement on social media that's exponential, absolutely reproducible. There were some intentional steps that we had to take, and it requires, you know, spiritual and relational elasticity. But beyond that, if you're willing to learn, honestly, I think that what we're doing represents the low watermark for what can and should happen in North America in particular. Mm. You know, I absolutely believe that. I don't think we've even begun to do what needs to be done or what I believe the Holy Spirit is calling us to do. So I welcome sharing, you know, what we're doing. And also recognize we've made a lot of mistakes. I've made a lot of mistakes. And so I would love to cut the learning curve for those who want exponential change within their respective communities. So you don't have to reproduce the mistakes that we made, you know, but hopefully you can reproduce the things that work.
Yeah. Well, that's encouraging. And as you know, I actually was planning to come out there and observe what you guys were doing.
I know,
and learn. And then there was the issue, small issue of this little virus that hit. And yes. that changed.
We still want you to come.
Oh, I'm still planning on it.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, as soon as it makes sense, you know, because I want to see you guys in action and really be able to interact with people. But let me follow up. You mentioned some principles and you said I can share about those if you like. I would like. So what are the principles?
So there are three guiding principles that we have here in Potomac Valley. The first is being a learner. You know, the Proverbs say that even if it costs you all that you have, get understanding, get wisdom, get knowledge. You know, so I think the first place that we had to get to was being a church that was willing to learn and being leaders that are willing to learn. The second principle is really a real commitment to leadership. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. And then the next thing is a real commitment to ensuring that you leave behind a legacy, you know? Mm. So it's learn, lead, legacy. Those are the three guiding principles. I'll start with learn because it's probably the biggest and most important thing.
Yeah.
You know, we've been a church for about 14 going on 15 years. We started out like many churches in North America right now. We used to be a region of another congregation. So in our case, we're a region of the Northern Virginia Church that became a congregation in 2007. Between 2007 and 2014, we had incredible leaders that gave every ounce of their energy, deployed every bit of effort that they had to spread the gospel and to preach the gospel. But for us in our situation, our composition and geography really negatively impacted us. And in particular, in 2008, when President Obama was elected, there was a lot of tension within our church and a lot of hurt feelings that really created a lot of factions and disconnection within Potomac Valley. So though a lot of effort was put forward and people became Christians, one product was our area is transient. Lots of people move in and move out. But also our foundation was shaky because of these strained relationships. And so we went from having 132 disciples when we started the church to 135 disciples 7 years later. So we went from 132, we went up to like 160, and then we went down to back down to 135. So real world, 7 years, hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars of energy and effort, thousands of hours of discipling, Bible studies, counseling, lessons, we only grew by 3 disciples. And that was sobering for us as a church. Mm. And Tasha and I came in 2014, and we met with all the leaders. We met with every member in the church and talked to them. And we were really sobered. We lacked vision. We had strained relationships. So the first step we had to take was just to say, look, we really need to rethink what we're doing. We need to be learners. So we dug into the scriptures. We devoted ourselves to prayer and to fasting. And we went to learn from great models. So we decided, hey, for the next 10 years, from 2015 to 2025, we're going to get on a plane and we're going to go to Indonesia. They're ahead of the curve. And we're going to learn from them. And in the past 5 years, we've taken over 50 people from the U.S. to Indonesia to study what they're doing. And it was really sobering. I mean, you're in the largest Muslim country in the world, and they're just killing it. And you're like, maybe it's just that Harlem and Vanya are like these exceptional, charismatic leaders. But when you go there long enough and you get underneath the hood, you realize, yes, they are charismatic. They are amazing leaders. But really, the church's engine is not the evangelist in Indonesia. It's the small group. The hero, the person most celebrated, is a small group leader. And so we learned from them the importance of relational discipling. We learned from them the importance of small groups. We also learned from them the importance of being very bold in reaching out to public officials and being very intentional in serving the community. So we've just taken that approach that they've modeled and duplicated it here in the U.S. But then we are super convicted, and you read the gospel accounts. What was Jesus? Focused on small groups, bold with public officials, very intentional with serving the community. Like the basis of his leadership was learning, was discipleship. And so once he found 12 people that are willing to learn, he multiplied that to 120, and that group of 120 changed the world. So by contrast, you know, since 2015, from 2015 to now, we've gone from 135 disciples to 250 disciples.
Wow.
Same group, same place. And in all honesty, it has nothing to do with the dynamism of our leaders. It's the principles that we followed that have really led to the transformative change. And now we do have a number of former and elected officials that are both Republicans and Democrats that are actively engaged in our community, that come to our small groups, that we've had out to church, and that some of them are studying the Bible, you know. And so we've gone from something that honestly, Satan tried to use to divide and destroy us, to flipping the script and switch, you know, really snatching victory from the jaws of defeat and saying, we're not going to be divided based on our diversity. We're going to instead be disciples and celebrate our diversity.
Yeah. And that's fantastic. And you mentioned Harlem and Vanya Salim. They lead the church in Jakarta, Indonesia. An amazing church there. So that's good. Now, one other thing before we move on a little bit here. You guys, just tell us a little bit about, you guys host this annual meal, which is just incredible. Tell the audience about that, man, because that's cool.
Oh, my gosh. It's so wild how God did this. I got to give credit where it's due. So, you know, one of my mentors, a really good friend of both yours and mine, Antonio Boyd, you know, I told him, you know, the first time we had this missions contribution where the church just blew it out with missions. We're so blown away. And I said, Antonio, I'm so excited about missions. And he said, Will, whatever you do, make sure you thank those people. Make sure you make a meal for them. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to do that. And so we started with just doing a barbecue to celebrate missions. And then that turned into us looking at the scriptures, and in a staff meeting, we're talking about how could we celebrate Easter? And that led us to looking at the great banquet Jesus says, you know, when you have a banquet, invite the poor, the lame, invite everyone. And so not last Easter because of COVID, but every Easter, the past two or three Easters prior, we have had a massive barbecue where we barbecue as much as 1,000 pounds of meat and with all the fixings. And we just have an open meal for the community. Everyone can come. The Christians donate food items, and we give people free bags of groceries if they need it, free clothing, you know, toiletry items. We just give to the community, and we invite the community. And we've had, but it's a place where we intentionally invite, like, Republicans and Democratic politicians to come to. We intentionally invite the homeless. We intentionally invite, you know, people that, you know, are receiving free or reduced lunch, you know, so that we can really be a host for a banquet that celebrates everyone. And bro, nothing like it. I mean, just so inspiring, so heartbroken. We couldn't do it last year.
Yeah.
Looking forward to doing it this year. So we're our aim is to do it for Labor Day this year, and to celebrate the new school year, hopefully.
Yeah.
And return to some normalcy.
That's so brilliant, and it's smart to move it back from Easter, because I'm not sure we'll be ready to roll by then.
I wanted to do Easter, but our staff was like, "Will, no, people are gonna die."
No, I understand. Yeah, but I, you know, from our lips to God's ears, by Labor Day, let's hope we can be back in there. So that'll be great. Now, let me switch gears a little bit. Stay in the same neighborhood here, but the you know, we've talked on this podcast quite a bit about the example of the early church, and they strongly engaged in the world and to strive to demonstrate justice and all of that in the kingdom of God. But they also consistently refused to do so through the means of political power and the means of empire and some of those things. So how does your church seek to practically find that balance between engaging with the world, but not getting embroiled in or giving allegiance to partisan politics?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's like the question of the hour, right? Like, I mean, you know, I mean, we fundamentally are so kind of schizophrenic about this as Americans.
Right.
You know, we're not quite sure how to make sense of it. And we very often paint political parties as if they are based on morality, or they are inherently Christian or non-Christian. Here's how we do it. We decided to embrace a cruciformed approach. So an approach that extends its hands to the right as much as you extend your hands to the left. Now, you know, truth be told, this is very problematic for me as a Black man who's a minister, because the assumption that people make is that I'm a Democrat, because they're like, you're Black, you're Democrat.
Right.
But all Black people are Democrats, right? You know, and so there's kind of that assumption. Or if you care about social justice or social issues, it's inherently a Democratic position. Or if you care about, if you're pro-life, which I am and we are, then you're inherently a Republican, or you're on the conservative side. Or if you're pro-traditional family, you know, you're on the conservative side, and therefore you're anti, you know, people that are in the LGBTQ community. So we said, we're not going to play by those rules. Mm. We refuse to play by those rules. We are going to just be Christians. And so anybody from any background is welcome in our community. And so I intentionally built relationships with Democratic politicians and intentionally built relationships with Republican politicians. And we sought to really bring them together in private, pray with them, bring them, you know, engage with them in a real way. But we're also very public about our commitment that we don't endorse candidates, we don't endorse platforms, but we welcome and we invite these folks into our space. So we've had Republican and Democratic congressmen who are diametrically opposed right now in Congress to each other. You know what I'm saying? They've come to church with us. Mm. And local government officials as well. I'll be honest. I do not believe that politics is the answer. I think there is value to government, but there are limits to government. The only answer is in Christ. But these politicians also need to hear the gospel.
Right.
And they also need to go to heaven. And I think a part of that for me, honestly, is born out of my own history. You know, my dad ran for political office when I was a kid. I have cousins that have served as prime ministers in Jamaica and government officials. I'm neither impressed by politicians nor disgusted by them. They're just people, you know, and so I'm a Christian. They're people. I need to be a Christian to them. And I've found that that's largely been widely accepted. You know, there's, and I'm talking about with outside of our fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
In our fellowship, this is very problematic because, you know, we have, because of our concerns about the confusion on these issues, we've often avoided these issues altogether.
Right.
Or taken positions in private that are reflected in our public ministry, but are not very clearly articulated. And I would just say that I think it's critical for the church at this point to be the unifiers in our communities and not to be partisan. But we can't be neutral. There is no neutrality. You know, you have to take a position. And our position is cruciformed. Right and left, we extend our hands to you. Is that a dangerous position? Sure. If you take a cruciform position, someone at some point is going to try to crucify you.
Right.
So
well said.
You got to be prepared for that. But that's the least of our worries. I mean that in all sincerity. Like, if I were afraid of being crucified, then I wouldn't choose to be a Christian. You know. And so being a Christian means that I know that at some point, and I hope it's when I'm very, very old, you know, like Polycarp, we'll stand before the proconsul. And we'll have to stand up for our faith, you know. But until that time, I want to make hay while the sun shines and spread the gospel to these folks and partner with them where it makes sense and not partner with them where it could be, you know, compromised.
Yeah. No, that's really helpful. And you mentioned, just for clarity's sake here, you mentioned that you bring in you know, politicians, both Democrat and Republican, right and left. When you say that, are you referring primarily to you encourage people or you invite them as personal guests to come in, experience a community as any visitor would, study the Bible? Or are you referring to, you know, they're coming in and addressing your congregation as a politician? Is it one or the other? Are you doing both of those? What does that mean?
And I would say this as a caveat. I think everybody has to do what they feel, you know, good about. You know, whatever doesn't come mm-hmm. from faith is sin. So I wouldn't encourage anyone to do something they don't feel good about. We do all of the above. So I invite people to come as a personal guest. There are times of the year, like 9/11, for instance, where we've had a congressman and the chief of police come and talk about the importance of being a good neighbor. We don't have people come and make political statements or political appeals. Before we shut down for COVID-19, we had a group of politicians come from both sides of the aisle to talk to us about COVID preparedness, or they might give us an update on what's going on in the community. And you know, so we find spaces where we can engage them to come in a nonpartisan form to be able to share with us. Again, everyone has to make sense of that differently.
Yeah.
And a unique part of why that's important for us is because of our geography. Like, you know, I mean, you know, if depending on where you are, I would invest in hunting, or I would invest in basketball, or, you know, it just depends on what. Here, politics is like the thing, you know? And so in our arena, you know, we found that it's helpful to find creative ways, like the Great Banquet, to say, hey, why don't you come and you can mingle with people and meet people, but please know we invite everyone.
Yeah.
You know, and we won't give platform to one in favor of the other. because we're not picking sides, really. We are, you know, kind of like the commander of the armies of God said to Joshua, I'm not on your side or the other side. You know, I am who I am. I'm a disciple and I'm a minister of the gospel.
Yeah.
And I want you and your family to go to heaven.
Yeah. Well, you're being the kingdom of God. That's what I think is so great about it. And it will overlap at times, you know, and look conservative in one moment and look progressive from another angle.
Yes.
And, but it's what I appreciate that you guys are doing is what I see as a real commitment to being the kingdom wherever those chips may fall. And so I appreciate you guys doing that. Let me ask you another question here, Will. So I know, you know, you've already demonstrated that your church has a real heart and a passion for the vulnerable, for the oppressed, the marginalized, that sort of thing. How do you help disciples in your church, you know, live for the life of the world in a meaningful way, standing up for the oppressed and all of that, but then also on a personal level, avoid creating an idol out of a political party, a nation, a cause, or anything other than Jesus? So you've kind of addressed how you do it as a church, but maybe I'm addressing this a little more like on the individual heart level. How do you tell people, hey, we're going to get engaged in these issues and stand up for the oppressed, but we're going to make sure that we don't start giving our allegiances to a nation or a political party or a specific cause or anything like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll tell you, it's really, really hard. And it's super confusing right now for a lot of people. What I've found to be the most helpful to us is just talking about it. You know, things, dark, dangerous things grow in the darkness. So, so we found just let's be open. This idea of being cruciformed, there's almost not a Sunday where we don't share that. Like, hey, this is, look, and we address it directly. We're like, look, Republicans are not racist. There are racists who are Republicans and there are racists who are Democrats. Racism is a sin that people have. It's not a political party. And Democrats are not demons. You know, we're not going to demonize Democrats. We're not going to deify. They're not God either. They're just people that, you know, organize around a certain idea. And neither one of them represent the kingdom of God. You know, they just represent their political constructs. And so, you know, we're very out front and direct about it because we know that Satan has used that in the past as a wedge issue to try to destroy our church. And we refuse to let Satan do that. Mm. And, you know, on a personal level, we make sure that we talk to people about having these conversations in their D times, talking through how they're feeling. You know, we've taken a page from your efforts with the squad. And we recently appointed a team of deacons and deaconesses that are devoted singularly to diversity issues and to understanding diversity issues. But we decided we didn't want to just go wide, we wanted to go deep. And so, you know, we looked at Acts 6 as our model. And we're like, all right, so we really need to pursue a deep resolution of these issues. So they've been meeting for the past several months now, just hearing each other's stories, building a bank of empathy and understanding within themselves, getting training from one of our elder couples, Patrick and Ruth Jones, to really understand each other. And they're then going to take that example and be able to teach the church. Because truthfully, for all the things that I'm telling you, there's no one leader or group of leaders that can take on all these issues. So we really try to, you know, if you will, spread out the load, share the work, all come at it together. But talking honestly, I think, is the biggest thing. And you know this, I mean, just because I know we're having a real conversation, we're horrible at this. Like Americans are horrible at this, but our family of churches, we're horrible. We do not talk about real issues. we really do think we can baptize our way out of every problem.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, yes, helping people become Christians is central to the Christian message and to the solution. But you, some things you actually need to talk about and talk through and, you know, reconcile and resolve. And issues around race and inequity and politics and positions, those are real conversations we have to have. Or they become wedge issues, and Satan uses them. So
yeah,
that's what we're doing. It's hard and it's messy. And, you know, please, whoever's listening to this, don't judge us when we fail. Just know that we're trying. You know what I'm saying? And we'll get back up the next day, you know, because we definitely don't have it figured out.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm not sure there's a succeed in this area. I think there's just a journey, right? I don't think there's a destination until we reach the age to come. Now, I'm assuming, Will, that the last year has made it much easier for you guys to navigate political issues. And
absolutely.
it's just been a breeze the last year, right? Is there anything specific you've learned kind of in the last year that was really challenging, or that you guys have learned that, like, man, you know, we wouldn't have learned that without the challenges of pandemic and social revolution and everything else and all the political stuff going on?
Yeah, there's a lot that we've learned. There's a lot that I've learned. I'll tell you, it was brutal. Just about anybody that I know that served in the ministry thought about leaving their post many times, you know, because it just was brutal. And honestly, we just weren't prepared for this hit. I knew a hit was going to come. I just didn't know it was going to be this. And it was challenging. I think the big things that I've learned from the experience, you know, one is that if you care about people, you can't care what they think about you. It's this interesting thing that I learned in walking with Jesus. Like, you really have to not care about what people think about you, because in the moment, people think horrible things and say horrible things. And, you know, I've had Christians that have accused me over the past year of some stuff. I'm like, what, dude? You know, I'm like just trying to make it, right? Why are you kicking me while I'm down, man? You know, but I had to really go to God and say, all right, I can't care about what you think about me, but I have to care about you, because Christ cares about me, and Christ calls me to be compassionate. So that was one thing. And in effect, easy way to kind of say that is, you got to get a thick skin, you know, have a hard head and a soft heart. That was one thing I learned. The other thing I learned is that the world has like no solutions, you know, and I mean that in the truest way. Like, so many of us look to the world, and so many leaders in the world project strength, when the truth is they're just as terrified as everybody else. If you can be a real friend to people in a crisis, that really matters, you know, and I found how powerful that is. One story I'll tell you that just blew me away was, you know, we've been building relationships with a number of local officials. And in June, first week of June in 2020, you know, our area where I live, my county, second largest jurisdiction in Virginia, first majority minority county, our chief elected official, the chair of our board of supervisors, reached out, had our office reach out to us and said, hey, we need to have a conversation about race, but we want to ask Potomac Valley to host it. And because we know that you are impartial, that you're not going to be mean-spirited, you're not going to use this to, you know, to bludgeon people, but you really will listen to both sides. And that was the most encouraging thing to me, is I learned that people really are watching and they're listening. And so that was so encouraging to be able to serve our community in that way, and to do it not as a partisan, but to do it as a Christian. And again, you know, we have a lot of work to go, but that was so encouraging. So have a thick skin, have a tough head and a soft heart, and serve people because they really are watching.
Mm. Man, this has been so rich and helpful. But before we end, two things. One, I don't want to fail to mention your podcast, the Greater Everyday Podcast.
Yes, we're so grateful to have you on. Oh my gosh, bro. We talk about it all the time.
That was a lifetime ago, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
It was only a few months ago, but it seems forever ago now. Man, things have moved fast, but you can find that on pretty much any platform, right? Greater Every Day. Do check that out. You guys have some great stuff on there, some great topics, great guests. And we'll put that, I'll put that in the show notes here too. So that people can find that. But as we close out here, I just want to know, you know, what's next for the Potomac Valley Church? What do you guys have on your vision board or that you're dreaming about?
Yeah, so for us, you know, all eyes are on the next decade. So we're really excited about 2021 to 2030. If Jesus doesn't return, we're going to give it everything we've got. And if he returns, we're saved. So we're grateful for that. And by God's grace, in the middle of the pandemic, we're able to purchase two facilities, so a building in Fredericksburg and one in Dumfries. So we're really looking forward to being able to have in-person services. We're launching a preschool this summer to really meet the needs of our young families. We've got lots of young families. But over the next decade, our prayer is to multiply the number of family groups, contribute to the effort to spread the gospel here in the DC metro area, the DMV, and prayerfully just, you know, be a community that people that are not Christians can say, like they said about us, you know, in the book of Acts, that in Antioch, that, you know, the disciples were called Christians. We really pray that people can see a Christian community in the way that we serve and the way that we give. But please pray for our small groups. What's next is the multiplication of family groups. That is the if you will, the focus of the decade is we recognize you can talk to lots of people, you can share lots of stuff, but life is done and change happens. And families are grown in family groups. So please pray for us there.
Absolutely. I urge everyone to do that, to pray for y'all, pray for what you're doing. I so appreciate it. I do want to ask one final question before we go. You're in the DC area. Do you have a preference on the name of the Washington football team? Do you have a favorite that you're hoping
for? That's like the thing, bro. That's the thing. I do have a preference. I prefer that it not remain the Washington football team.
Okay. Because I've heard some people say they should just keep that. I've heard that.
Yeah. I think we benefit from a rebrand.
All right.
You know, I would love, you know, I would honestly love the Red Tails or something kind of that.
That's my pick too.
So that's my pick, but honestly, anything but the Washington football team, because people like say it like disparagingly, and we already have like real challenges with our team.
Yeah,
we need at least some branding love. So that's my preference.
I'm with you on the Red Tails. I like the history behind that. I think it's it works well. So that's good. And I think you guys are up and coming though. You're up and coming. So we'll see. It's I'm a Green Bay Packer fan, so we just have year after year of being good enough to win the Super Bowl, but never actually doing it. So there you go.
I know, bro. Hey, it's the pain, man. It's the pain of having the team.
Yeah, so. it's almost worse when you get that close though than if you just know going in just that you have no shot. Yeah. Man. We will keep praying for you guys. We'll keep watching what you do and learning from you all. Such a privilege. to have you on here. And I know that this won't be the last time that I'm going to ask you to be on. So be prepared for that. So I appreciate it. Take care, and we'll see you soon.
Sounds good, bro. Thanks.
I'll tell you what, I just love that brother. And if you've not heard of him before today, then I think you understand why, and I'm pretty confident that you love him as well. It's just such a great heart for God, and they really are doing very cool things out in the Potomac Valley. Much to think about and learn from. Thanks so much for joining me today with my guest, Will Archer. If you have any feedback, questions, comments, you can write me at allthingstoallpeoplepodcast@gmail.com. You can go to michaelburnsteachingministry.com to pick up Escaping the Beast or any other books or resources that I have there. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you next time on the All Things to All People podcast.